This is another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. There's more at my website, allbook-books.com. And if you want to, check out the Substack page, Musings from Between the Lines, which you can find at the homepage of the website. And if you have any requests, I don't know that I will follow them, but I'm certainly open to requests for a show topic. I hardly ever hear from anybody. I don't know how many people are actually listening, but I know some people are listening. All right. This week, I just had a phrase pop into my head. When it rains, it pours. However, not the typical spelling, but R-E-I-G-N-S and P-O-O-R-S. So I thought, okay, that's pretty amusing. Maybe I'll do something with it. Maybe I won't. It's kind of a serious topic, and I'm not sure how well the puns would go over. But like I say, I just work here, and the ideas pop into my head a lot. So I looked up the word rain, and that ties in perfectly to what is going on with virtually everything in the troubled world. The word means kingdom, state, governed by a monarch. Kingdom, land, country, from the Latin regnum, kingship, dominion, rule, and realm. So these are the same things you hear over and over again with the doctrine of Christian discovery and domination and dehumanization, people lording it over other people and the earth. This is related to regere, to rule, to direct, to keep straight, from R-E-G, move in a straight line. This is one of my go-to quotes for repeatedly mentioning how the empire works to keep you in a straight line in your consciousness, whether it's standing online at the store or in your consciousness or in your traffic lane. The basic idea is to empire is to keep you thinking in straight lines and to manipulate you from that place. Whereas the natural world has twisted lines and curves and spirals and such like. So then I was listening to a very interesting guy, Shahid Bolson, and he was talking about the wealth and the resources of Africa having amidst 100 years of geopolitics, paradigm shifts and wars and this and that, the one thing that has not changed has been, which he says is obviously very telling, is that the pillaging of the resources has not changed. So that is the fuel that runs the system of domination. And he used a line that then said, then convinced me to do this episode, because it's when it rains, it pours. He said, violent accumulation of wealth and resources. Violent accumulation of wealth and resources. So this, again, is what throughout history has fueled and continues to fuel the system of domination, is the wealth taken from the Mother Earth, violence perpetrated on the Earth, into the Earth with the fracking and the mining and mountaintop removal, pollution, etc., etc. And also towards the people. I mean, that's proven throughout history books and just basic history. And currently with the missing, murdered, and indigenous women, that is a major threat. Now with the lithium mining, and whenever they want to put a, you know, some kind of mining into an area, the man camps and such like are considered a major threat to the women there. So that is part of the violent accumulation of wealth and resources. And that is part of empire, and that is part of the reign, R-E-I-G-N, which keeps the masses of people at slave labor poor. So Eduardo Galeano's book, 500 Years of the Pillage of a Continent, that's the subtitle. Open Veins of Latin America is the title. That was the book that convinced me of all of this stuff. And then after that, I read Tom Burgess, The Looting Machine, Warlords, Oligarchs, Corporations, Smugglers, and Theft of Africa's Wealth. Well, right there in a nutshell, tells you the atrocities and the violence going on. Warlords, oligarchs, corporations, smugglers, and the theft of Africa's wealth. So I just want to read a couple of snippets from that book. In the dry language of the World Bank, Salim was describing the looting machine, the alliance between shadow governments and the resource industry that tramples over the people who live where oil and minerals are found. So there it is. Again, governments, corporations, Mussolini's fascism. Salim noted the propensity of the resource industry instead to create poverty through pollution, including cyanide spillages, forced resettlement, and the loss of grazing lands. This involves, you know, people like the World Bank, the IMF, Emil Salim. The game Salim and his team concluded was rigged, and the World Bank appeared to be on the wrong side. Quote, the knowledge, power, financial, and technical resource gaps between major extractive industry companies, civil society, developing country governments, and local communities throughout the world are profound. And another quote, when it comes to poor countries, estimated losses represent far greater shares of government's overall tax take. Global Financial Integrity, a Washington-based pressure group that has helped propel multinational tax avoidance into the political debate, estimates that illicit outflows from the developing world amounted to $947 billion in 2011 and $5.9 trillion over the preceding decade. Four in every $5 of those flows were due to trade mispricing, when companies manipulate the prices at which they sell goods and services, either between their own subsidiaries or in transactions with other companies. The rest was the proceeds of corruption, theft, and money laundering in Africa. The outflows amounted to 5.7% of GDP, the highest proportion of any region and growing at a rate of 20% a year. African losses from trade mispricing alone are roughly equivalent to the continent's income from aid. The resources industry are ripe for trade mispricing. It serves as the camouflage conduit of the looting machine. So this is the, it's enough to elicit a scream at the insanity. I mean, just even driving around today, I'd see gas for $3.19, $3.59. You know, sometimes if the price goes up, one station gets a delivery before the other station, so the price going up is legitimate. But I'm thinking this is some of it's from town to town, and it's like 40 cents difference. Somebody is making an ugly penny on that stuff. And as well, all the food pricing, let's call it mispricing now, just because of COVID and sanctions and all that stuff. Now food prices have gone up like 25%, while the wealth to the 1% has gone up humongously. So that's the economic, in my view, from all the things I've read and studied, I mean, it's not breaking news, but that's the economic stuff, the gist of the economics, the geopolitics, the fascism, and Africa. Because if you notice too, I've noticed this for years, you hardly ever read about Africa in the news. It's pretty much off the radar, and that would one reason to explain why nowadays China is going in again for resources, even though they may be doing business more fairly. But then again, from the book Cobalt Red, that shows China is also in on mispricing and mistreatment of the poor. And then the Rare Metals War, the other book I've reviewed, shows again the poor, the people with the rice paddies. They can't even have clean rice paddies because of the resources and the minerals. And it's the same thing. It's the mining. And this is, as John Trudell summed it up, perhaps the best, the mining. The system just runs on the mining, and they're mining people's minds and spirits to run the system. And a lot of people willingly participate in it, especially those who get the goodies and the looty bags, and then there are those that just have to participate in order to work however many jobs to pay the bills. So it's really a disgusting system, but at least by identifying the system, one can try to find ways to get away from it and to encourage more community, land-based, local shopping and participation. That's, for me, one of the highlights when I go to the farmer's market, is I get to meet people, say, for example, somebody doing microgreens, or the farmers, or they're making jams. Those people are right here. They're right with the land nearby. And that, to me, is a vital form of networking. And as I tell them sometimes, I don't expect it, but if the grid goes down, I have some phone numbers if the phone would work, or at least I know where to find some people who actually know how to make food. So, I mean, I grow stuff on the patio, but there's not enough to subsist on. So this networking and working with small and local communities continues to be, I think, of vital importance. Not necessarily the answer for the big picture, but that's a whole nother story. So after recording the first bit, I listened to the first presentation in a summit, Zoom online Zoom summit, promoting the film Water is Love, and the bunch of speakers. And they talked about water a lot, so I had to do a part two. It was very moving, which is apropos of water, because that's what water is. It had me thinking about how people, there's always the next trendy movement about the new this, the new that, but water is always the movement, and it is the emotional bond between all beings. There was one presenter who said that we can pray with water. It transmits knowledge. It is helpers for transmitting prayers. So people that feel like you can't do anything somewhere far away, you can. You can pray through the water. And she said this is a Palestinian woman, an entity has to dance. Water is an entity that has to dance between all participants. It doesn't see the differences that the world geopolitical nonsense sees. And also, somebody mentioned that Israel is the only country where it is illegal to collect rainwater. And then to prove the country's, I mean, if you read the news, the horrific attacks, but to prove their lack of empathy, 90%, I had read, you know, of the water shortage in some article, but 97% of the water in Gaza is shut off to the Palestinians. And somebody mentioned in a short video, thirst, instead of starvation, thirstation, and instead of starving to death, thirsty to death. That is the level that the atrocities are at. And but this, you know, this put it in much more emotional, immediate kind of visceral terms when I heard it, compared to just, you know, reading articles about the war and the statistics. And another Palestinian woman said, water is saying we are huge. It is the system of domination that tries to make us feel powerless. And she said, it's time that we stop asking what to do, that it's inside us. We have the energy and the power within inside us. So that's a good message. And she said, it is important that we insist on our way of being and continue with our path. One of the videos showed six people, and it was either in the West Bank or Gaza, digging 6 hours to get water. And then they were happy when they pulled up some buckets of water. 6 hours digging to get the water. They weren't getting the water from the typical sources, so they decided to dig down and to get the natural waters coming up from the aquifers. There was also mention of the Dead Sea literally dying, the water there, and the Jordan River. Yeah, the Jordan River. There was some gathering there where people were asking forgiveness different people of different traditions or races or whatever. And then 9 months later, after 50 years, there was an opening of a dam to the Jordan River village. This was some pilgrimage. So it showed that a prayer among different peoples, this was after 50 years, and after people gathered and prayed with the water and asked for forgiveness, the Jordan River also being neglected and polluted, that then there was a dam released that allowed water to help some people get water. So it's a small success, but it shows the power of prayers and coming together. Another, that was this woman, Aida Al-Shibli. Another guy named Saad Dagar said it's not about water scarcity, it's about who's controlling the water. That's when he mentioned 97% less water since the attacks on Gaza, and some people drinking seawater to survive. And also the message of be the spirit of the water, because water doesn't distinguish. Be the spirit of the water. It was also mentioned the Bedouins digging in the desert for water, digging holes, I think bore holes, if that's the correct term, to collect water, and that he had dug 100 holes, and 92 of them were demolished by the army. That's like I've seen at the seen videos or read of the Arizona border migrants and such, like, you know, bottles of water for survival, and the border patrol takes them away. It's just, there it is. It's lack of empathy. Water is a literal empathy between all beings. So there it is, the lack of it compared with what the water truly is. And she asked the guy, what, you know, how do you continue when 92 of the holes have been demolished? And he said, there are 8 that are helping people, and if that's my work. If I can help people, that's my work in this world. That was my notes from listening to a little bit of the Water Summit, that first part. There's a bunch of them, and they're going to be up on the website for a while if you sign up. And there's a film called Water is Love. So I think the website is waterislove.org. So there's the other work mentioned, you know, collecting rainwater, agroecology. In the West Bank, Israel controls 93% of the water. So you're controlling the water, controlling the people. So that's rocks collects water. Anyway, may you be well fed and nourished, and thanks for listening. Be well.